I had like an awesome week, and it wasn't because the week was easy. It's just that everywhere I went, I felt like God was with me. And so I would go into a situation and I would tell God, I don't know what to do. And then God would show up. And it doesn't often feel that way like during an entire week, but I had a week like that. And I'm going to cling to that. I'm going to hold on to that because I'm not going to count on that being normal. But when you engage in the things you need to engage in and you recognize that those have been placed there by God, and you don't have to figure it out. All you have to do is be available to God and say, God, I want you in the midst of this situation. Anyway, while that was happening, I'm like kind of drowning in the subject related to the law of God and the doctrines of demons, because it's led me into so many different places in the scriptures. And as that has been unfolding since we looked at the book of Hebrews together, I'm realizing once again how woven together the story of the scriptures are. And as we talked about who Jesus was, which we were just celebrating with the Lord's Supper, the goal of all that was for Jesus to hear, "Well done." Well, that's the goal for us. Do you think Jesus heard, "Well done"? I think he did. I think he does. It's a beautiful thing. And then we talked, that kind of led us into a conversation about the tabernacle and the temple. I think in one of the classes, they're actually going to build a model of the tabernacle, which is kind of cool. I was looking at it and I was thinking, man, I wish I was in this class, because it's pretty dynamic. But the idea that the tabernacle and the temple are explaining to us the dwelling of God in the Spirit. So that in that woven story, it starts out with the portable tabernacle, then it moves into the temple that was built and then was rebuilt. And then you also have the picture of it being a dwelling of God in the Spirit. And so I think that's a huge woven teaching of the scriptures that's important for us to hold on to. And then we talked about the end of days and what that's going to look like, what we know for sure, what we don't necessarily know is going to happen. And there are two posts that are on the end of days. And if you didn't get a chance to do that, but you want to kind of look at some information on that, that's pretty findable there. So then I started going into thinking about the law of God, and I literally felt like God said, "Hey, Dave, I want you to think about the Ten Commandments again." I mean, it wasn't like an audible, but he was calling an audible the way I sense it and get it in my heart. And so if you look around you, there are some sheets. And what I did, I want to talk today, and we talked a little bit last week to set this up. And then next week is obviously going to be a celebration of Resurrection Day. But over this next, I don't know, 3 to 4 weeks, I'd like you to immerse yourself in this conversation with me, because I'm really interested in what God has to say to our body based on our giftedness, based on our proximities, and the different things that God is doing in us and around us. And if you look here, on the one side of the sheet, it's the part with the outline. I wrote out the Ten Commandments. I knew them, actually knew them from heart. But it was kind of cool because when we just sang that song, the doctrine song, for the teaching song for kids, my oldest son walked up to me and he said his boys had to look up catechism because they didn't know what it was. So he said, "I guess we've been a success." I'm taking that as another, I'm on a roll, But this lists out these commandments, and for some reason, and the church has really botched this, explaining this to cultures throughout history. the law was given, it wasn't given to Adam. And it was given 430 years after Abraham. It was given to Moses. So a lot of history had unfolded up to the giving of the law. And not the least of which, if you go through and choose to read about what happened at the flood, it is really something to imagine God looking at the earth and being sorry that he had made the earth. And that the heart of man was evil continually. This happened before the giving of the law. So, why was the law given? Was it given so that we could know what bad people we are? Well, yeah, there's part of that, you know, because God needs to point out to the human race what's going on so that he can lead us to experience freedom. And the whole purpose of the law was to give them freedom. Because if they could know, what it was that pleased God, and if they could make their lives be designed around that, then in each of those different areas that had been bringing bondage into people's lives, each of those areas would set them free. And I read a book once, and this is when I basically started figuring this out, it was called The Grace of Law. And where I grew up as an evangelical, it was law, Old Testament, okay? Grace, New Testament. And so it was the first time that I had ever wrestled with the idea that the law was a part of God's grace. So that's one premise that I go to this big, huge topic that I want you to look at with me. And what kind of triggered me into this, I don't know if you remember, but probably several months ago, I talked about the doctrines of demons, which if you turn the sheet over, that passage is listed right in the middle of the sheet. So what I've tried to do is give you a summary of this study so you can kind of look at the passages. And the doctrines of demons, and Daniel already stole my thunder, as I was doing which is okay, Daniel, because I wasn't sure I was going to share it anyway, but as I was studying the words, it is literally like angel vomit. It's like evil angels are vomiting on us. They're spewing out. And as they spew out, it's not just directed at us. It's directed at this. It's directed at God's law. Now, that makes total theological sense if you know anything about the history of Satan and God and the archangels and all that kind of stuff. So what I've done on the back of this sheet is I've given you kind of an overview of God being a life giver. And then the second mini paragraph there, how the corrosive nature of the sons of God has plagued us. Remember what happened in Genesis 6? Have you ever read that? You know, the angels came down and slept with women and they had babies. Okay? Think about that. And what they had to do that was that they had to leave the estate that they'd been placed in. And, you know, they're watching what's happening with humans. And so they're watching it, and somehow they concoct this idea, whether it's all for evil purposes or whatever it was. Maybe they were jealous, you know, related to the human race, because I don't think that they get to have sex with each other. It doesn't appear that way at all. And so in Genesis chapter 6, this really weird thing happens. And I remember reading it one time and going, what in the world? And that happened before the flood. That was part of God saying he's looking at the wickedness of mankind and I'm going to destroy the earth. So there's a corrosive nature of that. And that corrosive nature, it's why we have so much problem with sexual impurity kinds of things. And it's not just in this culture. Study your history. You know, you can see it all the way through human culture. And you go back and you realize that this has been an entry point for demons for a long time. And it forms the basis for, I believe, the doctrines of demons. And Genesis, Origins, Exodus, Exit, Leviticus, worship, Numbers, Wander, Deuteronomy, Standards. I know all the books of the Bible. Okay? I've known them for a long time. I know what they teach about. But God, this week, brought the book of Jude to mind, which is the shortest book. It's only one chapter long. And I spent hours doing word studies and looking at what Jude was trying to explain. And you know what he was trying to explain? He was trying to explain what it looks like for the doctrines of demons to be unleashed into the world. And he even goes back and uses the example of Satan and Michael disputing over the body of Moses. You know, and God buried Moses. Can you imagine what kind of mileage Satan would have gotten out of Moses' body? I think about that sometimes and how that relates to what has happened in history. So that's where Jude kind of fits in there with how the enemy is consumed with stealing and killing and destroying, like Jesus talks about in John chapter 10. So that's like a study in and of itself right there. So I'm inviting you to a series of experiences here biblically. And then I also picked up on this. He attacks the bride until the very end. So, you know, he went after what's called strange flesh, okay, over in the book of Jude. That strange flesh literally means that they left their abode and they went after somebody that was not their kind. Okay? So that's where the whole idea of strange flesh comes from. It doesn't come from some of the things that we attribute it to. But he attacks the bride until the very end. Until the end of time, he's there to attack the woman. We are the woman. We are the bride of Christ. That's why we have a target on our back when it comes to the doctrines of demons. And then that moves into the doctrines of demons passage and then into the difficult days passage, which is also in one of the Timothys. And then I also got into, I was looking at the keys when he says to Peter, I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. That's a whole thing that I need to think through, you know. I know what it means, but what are the implications of the keys? And so they're the major passages about the keys, and it ends up starting in Matthew, and it ends up in Revelation. Well, then this is a mind blower, and it's at the bottom of that sheet right there. I was waking up in the morning, and I thought, Song of Moses. The Song of Moses was in the book of Revelation. What? Why in the world was the Song of Moses in the book of Revelation? And it's a great thing to look at. I don't have time to read it right now, but go read it. And what you're going to see is that the angels sang the song of Moses and the Lamb. That's a mind blower. You talk about God at the end of the age pulling everything together in his woven story. And it's just another evidence that Old Testament bad, New Testament good is not true. It's woven together. There's one testament. So anyway, that's a lot of stuff. And maybe something on that list, that's why I put the passages there as I studied, you could probably look at these passages for 5 hours. Now, pick out the things that strike you as you read. So, back to our story on the other side of the sheet. That was kind of... So, as we just talked about, Genesis 6:1, sons of God come down and cohabitate with the daughters of men, Exodus 20 gives us the first giving of the Ten Commandments. Of course, they were broken. Deuteronomy means second law, so there were two sets of the commandments, but the first ones were given in Exodus 20. Last week, we talked a little bit about generations. And basically in Deuteronomy chapter 6, after the commandments were given, God is explaining to Israel, my word, you will speak of my word when you walk in the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. And when it comes about that your children ask you, then you are to tell them and explain it to them. So that's the whole teaching on generations, spiritual generations. I read a book once, it was called God Has No Grandchildren. And it's basically because God has to show up in every generation. You can't just pass it on. I mean, I think we thought we could do that. The Puritans thought they could do it, you know? You can't pass it on. You can create an environment for the word of God to be seen, but every generation has to cross the Red Sea, just like the sons of Israel did. So through the law, God explains the generations. So you've got the need, you've got the commandments, you've got the generations, and then like we talked about last week, and we spent most of our time here in Deuteronomy 30, where he's explaining how the whole thing works. Remember this passage? The word of God is near you. It's in your heart. You didn't have to go up to heaven to find it because it's been placed here. You don't have to go to the depths of the sea because it has been placed here and made accessible to you. And it's one of my favorite passages in tying together the impact of the freedom of the law. All of God's law is available to me. When I look at this list, do I go, have I transgressed this list? Well, of course. Especially if I think about murder beyond the idea of actually killing another person, which the Bible does explain that. You know, is this a list to get me off the hook? No. It's a list to explain to me who I'm dealing with. I am dealing with a pure and righteous and a holy God who cannot tolerate sin. It's not in his nature. It's not like he sits there and goes, I don't like it, so I'm going to pick on people. That's not what we're talking about here. We are talking about things that literally in the presence of God will burn up. And that's the story of the end of days. So that whole idea of this actually works, it actually brings me to freedom. I've never had to kill anybody. And I will tell you, I'm prepared. I'm prepared if I ever am called on by God to kill somebody. I had thought this through when I was in the military, and I thought it through, you know, I even think through that as a family member. And I thought through that as a pastor. You know, I thought, what am I willing to do? And fortunately, I've never had to do that. But sadly, you lust and you do not have, so you commit murder. Book of James. What? What? And you think about all the things in that continuum. All the doctrines of demons that fit on that one continuum, which we'll talk about after you have time to kind of think about this. Joshua 1:8 then, as you see this unfolding, he says, this book of law will not depart out of your mouth, but you should meditate in it day and night that you may be able to do according to all that is written in it. And because then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will find good success. So that's the handoff. That's the handoff from Moses. Did they do it very well? No. When he handed it off to Joshua, did that group of people do it very well? No. as the handoffs happened over and over again, did they do it very well? No. And this is exactly why the generations need the law. The last thing you want to do is look at your parents' generation or your grandparents' generation and then model your life from a God perspective after those things. Now, that's a real cut and dried statement. I understand that. But I'm talking about from a spiritual perspective here. Then, in this thread, and there are many parts to this thread, we see Jesus say, if you continue in my word, this is in John chapter 8, you are truly disciples of mine. You're truly followers of mine. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Do you think that Jesus' word included the commandments? I think it did. He commented specifically on it, and he said, there's nothing that's going to pass away from my Father's law. Not one little marking, not one jot or one tittle, I think they're called, as far as how it's written out in Hebrew. Not one is going to pass away. And so Jesus wraps together that idea of, I'm bringing you a life of freedom. I want you to be free. I don't want you to be in bondage. So then we have the books of James, which was written before Romans. So you've got James and Romans and Galatians, and they go to great lengths to explain how the faith and law fit together. How law was never meant to save us. It was meant to lead us to faith. Because without faith, it is impossible to please God. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And that's why those books are so beautiful. I had somebody call me this week and say, or texted me this week, and he said, I think that's the first time that Romans 7 and 8 have made total sense to me. I thought, that's so cool, because I think I've been following God and searching the scriptures for 5, 6, 7 years before that same thing happened to me. I thought, oh, now it makes sense to me. Now it makes sense when I look at Romans 7, the good that I wish to do, I cannot do. I find then the principle of evil within me, the one who wishes to do good, how that fits together with chapter 8, verse 1. There is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ. And I was like, wow, I understand this whole thing and how it fits together. And it was so good for my heart. And then I also mentioned, and you can look at this, Revelation 15, the song of Moses and of the Lamb. So that's where that happens, if you're looking for that. So, back to the sheet. Okay, so I'm trying to set up an opportunity for us to study something together over a period of weeks, okay? And basically, as I thought through, on the left side, I thought through the commandments. And I read through what Jesus said, you know, in Matthew about, you've heard that it was said, but I say to you. You've heard that it was said, but I say to you. You've heard that it was said, but I say to you. And then I read through the woes on the Pharisees. Woe to you, Pharisees. You do this, but you miss this. And I looked at all those things and I thought, the study of the commandments themselves, if you take those woven threads all the way through the Bible, you're going to find all kinds of stuff. I gave you an example of it when I told you about James, where he talks about you lust and do not have, so you commit murder. That's a thread that's carried all the way through. And I want to do that together. I want to, like, look at those. I want you to rethink the commandments, you know. So much of Christianity, when you follow God for a long time, it's Ten Commandments, blah, blah, blah. The cross, blah, 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 you know. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, blah, blah, blah. Because we stop discovering or rediscovering the wonder of whatever it is that God might be communicating to us. But this struck me a while ago, and there, and you can find the post if you go to fourthstream.com and just type in doctrines or doctrines of demons, and it'll pop up. It kind of laid the foundation for this, you know, months ago that I've been thinking about. And I just want to read through this passage. I'm making it easy for you today. You don't have to look things up, and I'm writing them all down for you. So, but the Spirit explicitly, very clearly, the Spirit very clearly says that in the latter times, some will step away. Okay, I think some translations say deny, but some will step away from the faith. Why? Because they have chosen to pay attention. Something has gotten their attention and made them willing to step away, paying attention to teaching illusions. Okay, that's kind of my translation there as I looked at the words. So you can look it up in your translation, but teaching illusions. You know what an illusion is? You know, if you ever watch somebody who's really good at doing illusions, it's pretty amazing. And I'm not talking about making cars disappear. I think it's interesting just to watch somebody at a fair or whatever, and I can't keep track of where the coin goes or whatever. You know, if somebody's good at that, that's pretty amazing. Paying attention to teaching illusions and the doctrines of demons. And this is why I spent some time talking about the grossness of Deuteronomy chapter 6. Because the way I see it now, because I went back to the book of Jude, and I'm studying it again, and when it talks about angels being kept in bondage until blah, 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 you know what I'm talking about in the book of Jude? I think that happened already for those angels. I think it happened when the sons of God came down the daughter with and cohabited with the daughters of men and left their proper abode. Whatever that looks like in the big picture. So teaching illusions, they seem like they make sense, but they're sleight of hand. And you think about that. You think about what we've experienced just in our lifetime, all of the different, the bait and switch kinds of things that happen in Christianity. I described to you the one that I ran into right away. The law is Old Testament, you know? Grace is New Testament. That's a sleight of hand. That's a teaching illusion. You must have gotten it out of the Bible because you can't find it in the Bible. It's just not possible. And what does this look like then? By means of the hypocrisy of liars. And that's what took me over to, once again, going through the hypocrisy of the scribes and the Pharisees. You've heard me say this before. I know I'm a Pharisee. I don't pretend that the Pharisees are worse than me. I have a Pharisee heart in my human heart, in my Romans 7 heart. By means of the hypocrisy of liars, burning in their own conscience like a branding iron. Now, have you ever been around anything that's been branded? That you've probably seen it on TV, right? The closest you've gotten. I've only seen it happen once. And, you know, when that goes into the side of the skin of the animal, it's like, it doesn't take a long time for them to adjust to it. Of course, they're animals. It probably would take me a lot longer to adjust to it. It happened to me. But the picture there is that we're taking teaching illusions, we take the doctrines of demons, and we take them to our conscience, and we burn a brand into our conscience. I mean, what kind of imagery is that? Kind of harsh. And this is another thing I discovered as I was reading Jude this week. I've always thought those who forbid marriage is talking about like the priesthood. You know, it's one of the issues I really have with that big part of the church. I won't mention their names because Siri might be listening. But that idea that we would forbid marriage, that's a doctrine of demons right there. You think about how that's woven into our culture now, just in the last 30 to 40 years. All the ways that we forbid marriage. Just do a word study on forbid and see what it means, which we'll talk about later. And they advocate rejecting foods. You just think about our world, you know. And I'm going through this right now because I want you to think outside the box. We are living in a culture that has really ramped up a religion. And we are living right in the middle of maybe one of the most widespread and powerful religions that has ever existed on the face of the earth. Who forbid marriage, advocate rejecting foods, and what's Paul's response to that? Which God has created gratefully to be shared by those who believe and know the truth. One of my friends made me a gluten-free dessert last night. And then we had the whole conversation about gluten-free and about low-carb and whatever. Had that conversation together. And it was really good once it got all mixed up, put together the way that it was supposed to. But that whole idea that God has created all things for us to enjoy. And I'm a low-carb freak now, and I'm glad about that. And if somebody needs to, you know, not eat meat, I'm okay with that. It doesn't bother me. I eat much less meat than I used to eat. It's not the point. It's not what the kingdom of heaven is all about. What the kingdom of heaven is all about supersedes that in so many ways. And yet he picks out these two things to talk about. Forbidding marriage and rejecting foods, which God has created gratefully to be shared in by those who believe and know the truth. And just think about how many doctrines come out of food, because we eat, right? How many doctrines come out of the idea of what marriage and what commitment and what it looks like to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. I think that was what God wanted, right? Do you think God was worried about us running out of room? I don't think so. Do you think he was worried about us running out of resources? I don't think so. And I'm a little bit nervous actually talking about this for the next few weeks, because you can't look at this subject without getting into really sensitive issues for people. If we start looking at the Ten Commandments, so I'm kind of warning you, if you actually start looking at the Ten Commandments and you start thinking about the doctrines of demons and you start putting that together, you might want to just kind of keep your conclusions to yourself. For everything created by God is good. And nothing is to be rejected if it is received with gratitude. Check this out. For it is purified by means of the word of God and through prayer. What does that mean? Wow. So, what I've done is I've tried on this sheet to reflect what's on this comparative study. And you'll notice on the sheet on the right, I immediately introduced Luke chapter 4. That's the temptation of Jesus. How do you think Jesus was tempted? He was being tempted by the one who inspired the sons of God to go down to the daughters of men. Okay? So Jesus is face to face with the real guy. And if you look at the three ways that he was tempted, the one that makes me shudder the most is, here are all the kingdoms of the world. I will give them all to you if you just bow before me. So that's rooted in this conversation. It's important to go there. In fact, that if this piques your interest, that's probably where I would go. And I also have some other passages in there. But so the contrast begins to be laid out. And that's what I'm doing here in my mind, and I want to do it together. And I literally am interested. I've already gotten some emails about this since I talked last week. I'm interested in your thoughts, whether you agree, whether you disagree. That's fine. Doesn't matter to me. You just go, delete. It's a wonderful world that we live in. No other gods, find acceptable gods. That's what the Jews did. You shall have no idols, but go ahead and live devoted to the things that gratify you. Those aren't idols. Come on. You got to be kidding me. And it's interesting, not taking the name of the Lord your God in vain. Here's another perfect example, because I grew up thinking that that meant cussing. Weird. But I never questioned it. You know what it means? Don't devalue God. Well, I can see where it came from, but think about all the things that come to devalue God for human beings. So do not empty my value, and then how do you empty God's value? Well, you're okay with self-exaltation. Number four, enter my rest. Think about that. God rested. And angels are vomiting back at that commandment and saying, that doesn't apply to us. We don't need to rest. And yet we know in Hebrews 4 it says, there remains therefore a Sabbath rest for the people of God. It goes on to explain it. And then our question is, who needs that? You know, who needs to rest? We don't even contemplate it. Unless we need a break, you know, and so we recast it. Number five, honor mom and dad. Honor your father and your mother. My parents are gone now. I did everything I could till the day that they were put in the ground to do everything I could to honor my mom and dad. Everything. I didn't know what else I could do, because it was a commandment. And I cared about them too, but it was a commandment. And where are we at now with the doctrines of demons? We are compromising family integrity at every turn. There are things going on in our culture right now. They don't think you have the right to raise your own children, because they don't think you know how to do it right. So it's not just a matter of dad and mom. It's a matter of the family generations, the way God has made things to operate. You shall not commit murder. Well, what goes with that? The end justifies the means. You know, do you think when Cain killed Abel, he thought, well, he deserves it. Now he's going to get it. And think about how that permeates, you know, our culture. And I don't even want to talk about the scope of how murder happens. No adultery. What are the doctrines of demons? Hey, go ahead and indulge yourself. You know, you've earned it. Think about all the different things. That's what popped into my mind there. No stealing. And this still blows me away when you see people that, you know, electronically or face-to-face, take somebody else's stuff and move it into their account. I wasn't raised that way. I mean, I can remember being in the Rexall drugstore in Chautauqua, Wisconsin, and I walked in and I saw some bubble gum and I grabbed it because I didn't have any money. And I walked out and I remember, you know, how they used to... the guys that dispensed the medicine were up in the air, you know, looking down at everything. And I remember the guy looking at me, you know, and I'm looking up. And I remember walking over, because I didn't feel good about doing it, but I wanted the bubble gum so bad. And I went over and I put it back in. And he didn't do anything but just kind of look at me like he was the eye of God over me. But that whole idea, but I deserve it. No false witness. My goodness. If we look at these Ten Commandments, if you're going to pick one out that we have slimed on steroids, it's this one. The idea of two witnesses? Heck, all I got to do now is say it and it's true. There doesn't have to be two people corroborating, and yet, especially in sliming your neighbor, you know, it had to be done on the basis of two or even three witnesses. And finally, no coveting. And what's the doctrine of demons? We just need to live free to crave. You know, even think about the word crave. Is that a negative word? It was more of a negative word when I was young. You know, the idea of craving. Is it that negative now? Nah. It's just a part of the doctrines of demons.